You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica. Hey, it's Charlotte.
It's Shelby.
It's Riley.
And it's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy.
Today's episode trigger warnings are graphic violence, murder, dismemberment, parental abuse, and explicit sexual content.
Parental abuse?
Uh-huh.
That's the one that stuck out to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. I was like, not like the dismemberment.
Wait, is like parental abuse like abusing your parents?
From the parent.
Oh, from the parent.
Yeah, from the parent, yeah.
A parent abusing their child. Oh, never mind. I mean...
That's fine.
God. I'm sounding terrible. That's not... I don't know what I... Just... You're right. You're right. And we have a new review to read.
Woohoo!
100% binged it all from Tay Dub. I've binged these like crazy. Love the back and forth. Truly entertaining. Told my coworkers about them, and now we go back and forth comparing icks, yums, and words we can't stand. Can't wait for the next one. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Tay.
Isn't it crazy to imagine people, like, discussing what we talk about at work in their groups?
Yeah, it's weird. It is weird.
It's so strange. I love it.
I know, I love it.
And today's book is Marrow by Trisha Wolf and Bryn Weaver. And how many stars did you give it on Goodreads, Shelby?
I gave it a 4.
I also gave it a 4. Maybe a 4.5. 4.25.
Yeah.
It was good.
It was good. I like serial killer dark romance books.
It was very different from anything that I've read. It was good.
Also, if a book is written by two authors, how's that work?
Who's to say?
I don't
know.
I have no idea.
Do they each take turns writing a sentence?
Could you imagine? It's like that one word game where it's like you and I.
Mad Libs. Right. Yeah. They just do like Mad Lib stuff.
I'm curious about it. So if someone knows, please tell us.
Yeah. My quote for you, Riley. I'm going to take your sweet, perfect ass and you're going to feel every painful thrust until you're forced to open those beautiful eyes of yours.
Oh. All right.
Aggressive.
And mine is toenails in my yogurt, testes buried in my tofu salad, entrails in my travel mug of egg drop soup.
Ew, what?
Yeah.
Delicious.
So we start in our female main character's POV, and her name is Kiri.
Kiri?
Yeah,
Kiri.
I think that was my only issue with the book is I kept wanting to say Kyrie because it's K-Y-R-I-E, but it's pronounced Kiri.
Does it give you like a phonetic Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Until like the second or third chapter, whenever they like phonetically spelled it out, I was in my head, I was saying Kairi.
Yeah, same.
But it's Kiwi.
Kiwi.
She's accepting a prestigious award at her job as a wildlife biologist at Bass Forensic College Field Research School. Quite the mouthful. And at this school, they study the decomposition of human bodies. So they fully have like a body farm. Have you ever heard of a body farm?
Yes. So interesting.
I have not until this book.
No?
So yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. It's just like they just have a field where they put dead bodies mm-hmm. in different stages of composition. And some of them are like shielded from the sun. Some of them are like soggy and damp.
I want to watch like a documentary on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, there's tons.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I've heard of a few just from like podcasts I've listened to. But it sounds so, I don't want to say cool. I feel like that's the wrong word. But very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you can use the word cool because those bodies are all given for scientific research anyways.
They're like donated.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fucking cool.
It's cool. While she's on the stage, she sees someone named Jack Sorensen in the back of the room and she thinks to herself how much she hates him. She gives her speech purposefully thanking everybody except for him. She like even thanks the janitor, but not Jack.
She's like, thank you so much.
And I think I've named everyone that comes to mind. Bye.
Not you, Jack.
Fuck you, Jack. When she goes back to her seat, her colleague Brad comes up to congratulate her and they make small talk. She asks him if he wants the two of them to get out of here and he tells her to meet him outside where he'll have an Uber ready for them in 10 minutes. She looks around for Jack, but he's gone. I don't quite understand why she hates Jack so much or why he hates her. They have like a weird
I was gonna say, does it ever dynamic. Say?
Kind of. So she hates Jack because Jack keeps trying to get her fired and Jack just thinks she's like annoying because she's kind of bubbly and like magnetic.
Oh, okay.
So he'll like go to the superiors and like say things that she messed up certain things, so she needs to be demoted or fired or transferred. So they hate each other.
Okay.
When they get back to Brad's house, she immediately jumps his bones, and while she's riding him, they start talking about work while he's like inside of her.
Oh,
no, thank you.
Brad tells her there are discrepancies in some of the bodies, missing hyoid bones, bodies not matching records, and a case of the pink teeth phenomenon, which is a result of asphyxiation where like the root of the tooth turns pink from someone being strangled to death.
Okay.
This conversation doesn't throw Kiwi off and she still manages to come while thinking to herself, how naughty, Dr. Sorensen. Brad tells Kiwi that Jack signed off on all the bodies with the discrepancies and they both agree that this is something they need to look into. Kiwi slips into the bathroom and comes back with a couple of drinks for the two of them and there's a little secret ingredient in Brad's glass. He falls asleep after being sedated and she puts on some of his comfy clothes and sneaks out to walk.
What's the reason?
We'll find out. We switch to Jack's POV. He's annoyed when he sees Kiwi leaving the party because he has plans for a study session with someone named Colby. And we learn later in the book that it's not really a study session. Colby is studying. And I suppose Jack is also studying, but
yeah, he is.
What's he studying?
Stuff.
When he first met Kiwi, his immediate reaction was to strangle her to get her to shut up, but he hasn't because he doesn't shit where he eats. So he's like, I want to kill her, but I can't because we work together. Dang it.
Darn it.
Shoot.
He follows the Uber that Kiwi and Brad got in his black BMW, and when he sees that she's going into Brad's house, he gets nervous because they're obviously fucking, and people who are intimate often reveal secrets. When he sees the lights go out a while later, he gets out of his car and walks into the unlocked front door. If Brad is having, like, suspicions about Jack, why would he leave his front door open?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But he did.
He's not smart.
Jack sounds like he's up to no good.
He is. He creeps into Brad's room and finds him sound asleep and alone. As he looks down at Brad, he considers strangling him, but Brad has information he desperately needs, so he decides against it, and he finds Kiri's ball gown from that night crumpled up by the back door. He clenches it in his hands, imagining what it would be like to dissect her before putting it back exactly how he found it.
Is this man a killer? He sounds like a fucking killer.
Maybe, but maybe not.
Okay.
He drives to the university and breaks into Brad's office to go through his records. Brad had mentioned the missing hyoid bone to him, and Jack had seen the look of fear on his face when Brad started to realize the truth about him. He doesn't find anything significant in Brad's record, so he takes a leisurely stroll through the body farm. He hears a noise off in the distance and follows it to find Kiri digging a hole, and he wonders what she's doing. He considers killing her right now and using the hole to bury her, but he's just too curious, so he flicks his lighter and Kiri stops digging. We switch to Kiri's POV. She tells him he's right on time and says, split-sobered barons. His eyes narrow and he asks what she's on about, and she also says, unleashing disappeared toast and missing credited koala.
What is happening?
He tells her to elaborate, and she pulls out a phone with a geotracker app where every 3-meter section of the globe is assigned a unique 3-word code. And she's standing at split-sobered barons. Each one is an area she knows that he's dumped a body.
Dun, dun, dun. How does she know?
How does she know? I don't know. Nobody knows.
Hmm.
Before he can react, she tells him that she has evidence against him that will go straight to the FBI should anything happen to her, so not to try any funny business. He looks at her backpack and asks who's in the bag. And I thought it was a backpack when I was reading it, but I think it's more of like one of those like big hiking bags.
I think so too. Okay, the ones that are like the size of like a child.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you find out what's in the bag, I was like, that's a big backpack, but I think that's what it is.
That's not fitting in a JanSport.
It sure is not. He looks at her backpack and asks who's in the bag, and she opens it to show him the severed head of Mason, the assistant who told Brad all the information about the discrepancies between the bodies and the records.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, she just has a severed head. He asks if she killed Mason, and she says, no, you killed Mason. She's wearing a pair of his boots, and she pulls her jacket back to reveal a bunch of weights attached to her that cause her to weigh about 190 pounds, the same as Jack. He asks if she's really this upset about him not kissing her ass in gratitude, and asks what she wants. And she says to tell her about the night they first met, and he tells her the first thing he noticed was her perfume. He also tells her that her smile could wash away all of his sin and that she was beautiful. And she knows he's trying to flatter her so she'll have mercy on him, and so she pulls out a taser and just gets him right in the chest with it. When he falls to the ground, she injects him with midazolam, which is a sedative, and whispers into his ear that he's wrong. That wasn't the first time they met, and leaves him on the ground and walks away.
Right. She is a psycho.
She is thorough.
Honestly, though, I was going to say she thought of things. Ooh, I would never think of. Like the weighing herself down thing? Wow.
Yeah, and in his own boots?
Yeah, genius.
We switch to Jack's POV. He wakes up 2 hours later realizing he's been sedated. He knows if he's alive that Kiri clearly doesn't want him dead, but he looks over to see the shovel stuck up in the dirt and knows that she wants him to dig a hole. He's exhausted at work that day after having spent the rest of the night digging up half of Mason's dismembered body that Kiri left behind for him to relocate. He figured she has the other half somewhere. He studies the hyoid bone of one of the cadavers he's studying in the lab, and this is like his favorite bone.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's specifically studying the hyoid bone for aging and gender determining purposes for the university, and he thinks to himself how ironic it is. Like, he's using the hyoid bone to help catch killers, but he is obsessed with hyoid bones for different reasons.
Yeah.
He's thinking about Kiri and how she's obviously a killer. He figures she seduced Brad to get information out of him and wonders to himself what happened to her that made her turn into a cold-blooded murderer, because women serial killers are extremely rare. He wants to find out what makes her tick so he can use it against her. Kiri comes into work shortly after, and everyone is gushing over her, congratulating her on her award from the night before. She goes to her desk to see a bouquet of flowers, and when she reads the card, she locks eyes with Jack before untying the ribbon around the stems and slipping it into her pocket. And this ribbon was like, I think, part of the clothing that Mason was wearing.
Yeah, it's like from his shirt or something. Mm-hmm. So he like cut a piece off and tied them to flowers for her.
And the flowers are blue, the same color blue as her eyes.
Her eyes.
So sweet. So thoughtful.
He goes into her office to ask if she likes the flowers. And he says that they're rare and he grows them himself. And she asks if he liked his is present, referring to Mason's body, but he gets annoyed and says that it felt incomplete because she literally left him half a body.
Yeah.
And then he asks where the rest of it is, but she won't tell him, and he really wants to strangle her. He asks if she's really this upset about him not remembering their first encounter, and she says that she bets he doesn't treat all of his one-night stands like this. He tells her she's sloppy and acted on impulse, murdering a grad student, and there will be consequences. And she tells him he's a funny guy, and she has an alibi for last night, so he's the one who's probably going to have consequences. He contemplates killing her, but his curiosity about her is getting the better of him. He asks what she wants, but she says he hasn't earned that answer yet. He tells her that he knows what he wants and trails a gaze over her body, which obviously affects her, but says that he wants her the hell out of his life, and she says, not a chance. But he does say that Brad needs to be taken care of, and she disagrees, saying that maybe Jack should try sucking his cock because he really likes that, because she sucks Brad's cock. Jack says that when Brad finds out about the missing grad student, things will get bad, and Kiri says, yeah, for you. So Jack pulls out his phone and plays a recording of the previous night where Kiri talks about framing him for the murder. So they both have evidence against each other.
So they're both smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They both think ahead.
They come to a compromise to get Brad to leave of his own free will, and whoever convinces him to leave will be the winner who gets to stay at the university. What was the competition name? The Thunderdome?
Yeah.
Why does one of them have to leave, though?
Because they can't have two killers in the same area.
Yeah, it's not good.
So they're both serial killers.
Maybe.
Sounds like they are experienced at killing people.
So at the end of this deal that they have, he'll erase the recording and she'll tell him where the rest of the body is. They shake on it and Jack gives her his trusty lighter, and as he leaves, she flicks it and places one of the flowers behind her ear. We switch to Kiri's POV. She gets an email for all faculty to attend an urgent meeting, and all body donations and field meetings are canceled until further notice. She calls a coworker and asks them to grab a book on statistics and probability in forensic anthropology from Jack's office before the meeting starts. It's brought to her immediately, and when the meeting starts, she hands the book to her boss and says she found his missing book on top of the microwave, while Jack glares at her while she snaps his lighter open and shut. So she just made Jack look bad in front of their boss.
She's like, I found your book that Jack borrowed. It was on the microwave. This is such a rivalry.
It is.
Yeah.
He walks up to her, looking her up and down before his stare lands on her throat, and she asks if this is his sad attempt at seducing her.
If I wanted to seduce you, I'd have you on your knees right now in the cold room with that treacherous little mouth of yours wrapped around my cock, begging me for more. He whispers. For a heartbeat, everything in the room disappears. Everything except Jack. Oh, she wants to put his dick in her mouth.
He walks away from her as she imagines Jack fucking her mouth and has to snap out of it by reminding herself that he's a total dick. Kiri congratulates Brad on having a proposal for a field research trip to Madrid being accepted, and everyone cheers for him. And Jack is pissed because that means his superior proposal was rejected. So he really wanted to transfer to Madrid, but she sabotaged his promotion.
Yeah.
Damn.
She's like, not today.
No trip to Madrid for me this year, I assume, he whispers. When I turn my smile toward him, it's fucking dazzling. I guess not. Suck my sweet pussy lips, Jack. I don't think I've ever said those words in my life.
No.
Suck my sweet pussy lips. I'm going to start using it.
It's quite the comeback.
Suck my sweet pussy lips.
The meeting is called to order, and the big boss announces Mason's disappearance, and Kiri acts shocked, just like everyone else. Brad is basically staring directly at Jack when there's a knock at the door and someone named Eric Hayes walks in. We switch to Jack's POV. Eric introduces himself as an FBI agent working Mason's case, and Jack can tell that Kiri is intentionally avoiding making eye contact with this new man. The agent asks Brad if Mason ever reported any discrepancies with any of the bodies on the farm, and Jack's heart is racing. But now it's clear that not only did Mason report to Brad, but also to the fucking FBI. So he's holy like, shit. The FBI here, they're hot on my trail because of damn. Fucking Mason.
So discrepancy in bodies. So it's are they meaning like how these bodies came to the farm and what they look like, or are they saying?
So there's like ones with missing bones, ones that I think, yeah, don't match up with the records that they have for what should be buried there. Like it should be something else.
Oh, like it's like another body there that was killed mm-hmm. a different way mm-hmm. or somehow.
Yeah.
Like, is that? Okay.
Brad jumbles through some explanations about how Mason reported some oversights with documentation while nervously looking at Jack, and he knows that Brad is more scared of him than the police. The agent continues questioning everyone, including Jack and Kiri, but Jack doesn't give anything away, and Kiri says that she's noticed discrepancies but never thought anything of them because to make mistakes is human. Kiri is asked if Mason made any enemies in the department, and she says she doesn't believe so, and the questioning ends with no real useful information being given, and in the hallway, Jack grabs Kiri by the arm and pulls her into an empty cold room. She asks if he's trying to make good on his threat about having her on her knees, and then he says that may be the only way to shut her up. He tells her she's careless because the agent is obviously here because of a pattern of men going missing in the area. Men that she's killed. He asks if she knew that Mason had contacted the feds before she killed him, and she says no, of course not, but she did what she had to protect Jack since Mason was trying to get him caught. Mason apparently had a file with more discrepancies that he was planning on telling Brad about, but she took care of Mason, wiped the files, and now Brad is off to Madrid for 3 weeks. She asks if he'll delete the recording because a girl has to look out for herself after all, and Jack grabs her by the throat and stares into her eyes.
You're not a girl, I say, my tone bordering on lethal. You're an irritating inconvenience that is begging to have her ass reddened, her pupils dilate. And don't you just hate how much that excites you? My cock jumps in response, the temptation to crush her windpipe, a fierce need coiled around my shrinking restraint. Wow, what a sentence.
He releases his grip a little bit and she says that he has no idea what dirt she has on him, so to be a good boy and release her. He slowly does and she says they need to take care of Agent Hayes, and he asks how she proposes they do that, so she tells him to use his imagination. She leaves the room to go join the search party, and Jack waits a few minutes so as not to be seen coming out together, and he's hard and annoyed that he can't get his rocks off by hunting his prey with the feds in town. Oh, so she's trying to throw everyone off her tracks, and she's like, where's Mason? Oh no, Mason! Are you behind
this tree, buddy?
We switch to Kiri's POV. She's staring at a crying Colby, the man that Jack was going to meet, behind the glass of her kill room, and tells him that Jack was set to kill him in a few days, so really she's doing him a favor. She tells him that he's enough of a piece of shit to fit her kill requirements, though, and talks about how he slips sedatives into girls' drinks so he can date rape them. His friends call him the Candyman.
That is such like a
that icky... is, yeah, gross.
What's up, Candyman? Like,
nickname, too.
You rape anyone lately, bro?
Yeah, bro! You forcefully enter any woman lately?
Against her will?
Yeah! Fucking nucks, bro.
Gross. She reaches into a freezer and pulls out Mason's severed leg, and Colby vomits on the ground. She tells him that she's survived men like him and tells him about the serial killer, the silent slayer who broke into her home, killed her parents, and stabbed her while she stared at their bodies. And she begins to rip the toenails off the severed leg.
Yeah. I read that part and I was like,
disgusting. She puts the toenails in a Ziploc baggie and tells Colby to clean up his vomit as she walks out of the room with a rifle. She sits on the sofa of her cabin and looks at an old photo of Jack she keeps in her pocket, thinking about the first time they met and how it changed her life. Everything she did was for him, getting the job at the university, securing extra acreage on the body farm, but Jack rejected her and now she wants him to pay. She uses Jack's lighter to burn the photo and takes her rifle and goes back to the campus. She sets out a blanket and looks through the scope of her rifle as Jack walks up, telling her that he didn't see her at the search, and she tells him to get down on the ground with her and look at what she's aiming for, and it's a sick coyote, and Kiri tells him that the coyote's name is Sunny Bunny.
Sunny Bunny.
And she's gonna kill him?
He's sick.
Aww.
Jack puts his finger on the trigger of the rifle but doesn't squeeze. She's studied Sunny for 3 years and has grown attached, but the coyote has rabies now, so she has to old yeller him.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. She takes the rifle and shoots Sunny, killing her instantly, and walks away without looking back at Jack. We switch to Jack's POV. For the past 3 days, he's been finding tiny parts of Mason in his work lunch. Gross.
Delicious.
Toenails in my yogurt, testes buried in my tofu salad, and trails in my travel mug of egg drop soup. Normal day at the office.
I just don't even know how she gets it into his lunch.
She's a sneaky gal.
Just a little garnish.
Yeah.
A little garnish.
Ew, imagine taking a bite of your food and a fucking toenail's in it.
Or some fucking, you mix your tofu salad and you see a fucking ball in it.
And he knows exactly what it is, too. He sits outside of the bar where he'd wait to see Colby, but he doesn't know where Colby is because Colby's not there.
Colby, where are you?
He sees Kiri walking through a crowd of students, so he pulls out his ball cap and begins to follow her. And this reminded me of Joe from You.
Yes! That's immediately what I pictured.
He sees the man that she's watching, and he's an obvious target. And the man makes his way out of the bar with an unconscious woman to an alley. Jack comes up behind them and drives a needle into the man's neck and sends an SOS alert from the girl's phone before throwing the man into his trunk. Back at his kill room, the man is naked and waking up from the sedative as Jack uses his fillet knife on his shin. So he's just, like, slicing little chunks out of his shin.
Ooh. Yeah.
Good morning!
He kills bad dudes. Is that what it's like?
Yeah, they're like Dexter.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The man begins to scream and Jack holds a wire to his throat. Jack begins to think about Kiri and how much her soft spot for the coyote perplexes him. He begins a cycle of tightening the wire and loosening it, but the man's face begins to form into Kiri's and he loses focus and all he can think about is Kiri and what she'd look like on his table and what it would be like to bite her hard nipples.
Mm.
The man tries to escape and Jack even lets him get a few hits in before driving a blade into his chest, and as the man dies, Jack just keeps stabbing him over and over and over again.
All I can think about is wrapping my hand around Kiri's throat and shoving her to the bloody floor. My grip loosens around the hilt of the knife and I drop to my knees as it clatters next to me. My damn cock is rock hard and strains painfully against my jeans. I drag the zipper down and free the thick girth from the confines of my briefs. Wrapping a blood-stained hand around the base, I hiss through clenched teeth at the erotic feel of my wet, warm palm. I'm staring at the morbid display of death and destruction on my cold room floor, but the imagery in my head takes me to her. To where her nails dig into my hand as I choke up on her throat, her lips as pale blue as her eyes, her tits perfect and begging me to fuck them. Ah, fuck. I rub my cock. The titanium studs cool against my palm as I pass over them with each stroke. Titanium studs! You got a little pee-pee piercing? The silence is deafening.
He furiously jerks himself, thinking about choking Kiri and going down on her and fucking her. Finally, he comes and he shoves his bloody, cummy dick back in his pants.
Ew, Charlotte. Bloody cummy dick.
Do you like that?
Unnecessary.
Well,
no,
it's what needed. It is.
It was needed. It's okay. It's okay.
Accurate description.
He walks out of the house, which is Brad's. So he's in Brad's house killing this person. And he burns it down and sends a text to Kiri that just says, your move.
Your turn.
Because he just burned a body in Brad's house and burned Brad's house down with a body in it.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Holy shit. And Brad's already in Madrid?
No, he's going in a couple weeks.
Where's Brad?
We switch to Kiri's POV. She's sitting at her desk working late when she gets a call from her friends begging her to come out to the bar to meet up with a group of girls and Brad. So Brad's with their friends at a bar, but she turns them down. She tells her friend it's fine because Jack is here at the lab, so she's not alone. She's admiring her award, and after she hangs up, she goes to place it back on the shelf, but she drops it on the floor and it shatters, throwing her into a flashback of the night her parents were murdered. A man presses a blade into her ribs as she stares into her mother's lifeless eyes. Her lips parted and her tongue severed. Her dad is bound and gagged, trying to squirm closer to her mother's body, but is kicked away by the man holding her, who pulls out a camcorder and begins to record. Her dad is begging for Kiri's life as the knife goes deeper and the man sticks a second one in. The man pulls out a hammer and bludgeons her father, and he screams despite his severed tongue. So this man cut out both of her parents' tongues. Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Another man walks in, dressed in black and beautiful, and wraps a wire around the attacker's neck, killing him right in front of Kiri. A piece of paper falls out of the new man's pocket and Kiri snatches it. It's the receipt to a restaurant at a university. Kiri closes her eyes and the man is gone, along with her father's tongue, the camcorder, and the hammer, and she uses the last of her strength to crawl to the phone. Suddenly, she's back on her office floor and a voice is telling her, it's okay, it's just a memory, it's not real, and it's Jack.
Who was that man?
I don't know.
I have thoughts.
What are your thoughts?
Is that man the new man? You're not gonna fucking tell me anyway. But is it Jack?
I don't know.
Oh my god. Connecting the dots. You know what I'm picturing? What my mind feels like right now? Is that one meme from like It's Always Sunny? He has all the photos and like the red lines to him and he's like,
oh, Charlie?
Yeah. Yeah.
He pulls her up on her feet and examines her bloodied palms and tells her she needs stitches, but she says that she'll just have another episode if she goes into the hospital. Jack cleans her wound and stitches her up using some supplies in the lab, and he asks her what happened, and she says breaking glass set her off, just like hammers and blinking red lights and cream-colored carpets. And those are all the things that were present that night. Jack goes to get her an ice pack and brings back a black t-shirt for her to put on since hers is covered in blood. He leaves her to change and she thanks him. And when he gets back to work on Monday, there's a replacement reward, but this one is made of brass. So he replaced her glass award with a brass one so she doesn't have breaking glass anymore.
That's so sweet.
We switch to Jack's POV. Brad has been arrested and is on a leave of absence after human remains were found in his burnt down house, but Agent Hayes is still prowling around the university. After a few days, Kiri has been acting extremely nonchalant toward Jack, so he grabs her by the arm when he sees her walking in the hall and pulls her into the cold room again. He tells her that Hayes isn't here to look into Brad, and Kiri gets nervous and changes the subject, asking how his kill with her targeted victim went, and his dick gets hard thinking about how blood coated the kill room that night. He starts to get all riled up as she keeps antagonizing him, asking about how he did it, and he grabs her by the throat, slamming a violent kiss against her. She kisses him back, and he runs his hands under her shirt.
I roam up her rib cage, fingers tracing the sexy curve of each of her bones, her skin soft and smooth. Bearing harder against her pelvis, I practically impale her with my cock. The fucker so goddamn raging to sink into her and discover how fucking tight her cunt can grip me.
Yeah! He stops when he feels the puckered flesh of her scars and asks who did this to her.
Who did this to you?
We love that. She says it was an accident when she was young, and he's like, nah, I'm not buying that with the way you panicked over shattered glass. So he lifts her shirt to examine them, and he knows that these are knife wounds. He kisses her on the forehead and tells her they need to get out of here. And then he tells her to stay away from Hayes. She walks out and he leaves as soon as he's not rock hard. He grabs his things and heads home and goes straight to his hidden trophy room where he pulls out a box with an 8mm tape. The first thing I think of when I think of an 8mm tape is it Insidious?
Oh.
Sinister.
Sinister, yeah. Uh-huh. Ah, those are so scary.
Yeah, I don't like those tapes.
No, they're terrifying.
Sinister is scary.
The lawnmower?
Ah! Ooh!
Or yeah. The pool? Ah! I can't ever... No.
I think that's the scariest movie I've ever seen in my life.
I think we've already talked about it, but The Strangers is like mine.
Oh.
I've never seen that one.
That's right. You haven't.
It's good.
That one fucks me up.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces. I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
He plays and rewinds and replays the video of Kiri's face as she lies there stabbed, and it's all coming together now. He'd really thought she was dead that night.
I knew it!
I fucking knew it.
He goes to the case where he keeps his bone trophies and takes out the hyoid bone of the Silent Slayer. He knows that Kiri wasn't always a killer, but he'd been the one that made her one.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. Ugh. Small world.
Full circle.
Crazy.
What a meet cute.
Honestly. Imagine telling people that later on. How'd you guys meet? Oh my god, he killed my mom and dad.
No, he didn't kill her mom and dad. He killed the guy who killed her mom and dad.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Still me, Kim.
We switch to Kiri's POV. That night, it's just her and Jack left in the office. As she's leaving, she tells him goodbye, but he tells her to come into his office. He hands her the hyoid bone and asks if the name Trevor Winters rings any bells. And she shakes her head no, and he says that he was a wandering handyman. She probably wouldn't have noticed him, but he definitely noticed her. And Jack says that he was tracking Trevor one night when he saw his truck drive by with a passenger. And he asks Kiri if it was her, and she shakes her head yes. He was their handyman, and her dad let him into the house that night. She flashes back to being at the hospital, Detective Hayes outside her door talking to a cop who is having his roof redone, warning him against hiring any wanderers, and now she's pissed because she knows that Trevor was on their radar and they didn't catch him in time to save her family. So Agent Hayes was the cop that was assigned to work the case for her parents' murder, and while she was in the hospital, she heard him like casually telling one of the other police officers like, hey, We're looking for, like, a serial killer handyman. So don't hire anyone to fix your roof that you don't know. So they just didn't work hard or fast enough to figure out who it was before he wound up killing her family.
And stabbing her multiple times.
Could
and
you imagine? That, yeah. Yeah, the rage you would feel.
Jack tells her that he knows her real name is Isabel Keery Clark, and he was the one that was there that night. He tells her Agent Hayes is tracing back old leads that led him right here. The sexual tension is thick between them, as he now knows she's stalked him and idolized him for all of her adulthood, but he tells her to go home and rest. So now he knows that them working together is not a coincidence.
Yeah.
She does, but can't stop herself from masturbating thinking about him that night. She wakes up the next morning and it's Saturday, so she takes her dog and goes out for her usual run. But when she comes back, Agent Hayes' car is outside of her house, and he says, "Hello, Isabel," and asks to come inside. She says okay, and when they're sitting down, he asks her about her thoughts on Brad. He says that he was told she was with him the night that Mason went missing, so she tells him she was, but she fell asleep around midnight and woke up at 7:30 that morning, so whatever he did between those times, she has no idea. Then he asks her about Jack. She says she saw Jack the night Brad's house was burnt down. They were at the office together. Hayes says he thinks the Silent Slayer is still alive and coming after her. That night, Keery is going to a club and she's wearing a blonde wig, a backless dress, and she's going by Bethany, and Jack followed her there. She tells him about the Hayes thing from that afternoon, and Jack asks who she's targeting tonight, and she says a man named Sebastian, a skeezy guy who happens to be the older brother of one of the Silent Slayer's victims. She walks by the bar where Sebastian is standing and gives him a seductive look that doesn't go unnoticed before heading out to the dance floor. She closes her eyes and begins to dance, and when she opens them, Jack is in front of her, wrapping his arms around her waist, looking pissed. She smiles and says the only thing Sebastian likes more than blondes is watching. He's a voyeur. He kisses her and says he's not here to claim anyone but her, and he turns around and Sebastian is there. Jack holds out his hand and says, "Sebastian, right? His name is Adam, and they met at a club a while back," and introduces Bethany. And Sebastian is super stoked.
He's like, "Hell yeah, let's go.
Let's fucking do this."
They have a few drinks and dance some more before Jack invites him back to their place for bitches and coke. And Sebastian says immediately yes. I would love nothing more.
Immediately yes.
Doesn't even pause.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will be there. Let's go right now.
I'd love some bitches and coke.
Is there anything better in life than bitches and coke?
No. Nope.
They head to a condo that Keery owns near the club, and they all head inside. Sebastian asks where the party is, and Keery says her friends are on their way, but they can start their own party in the meantime. Jack pulls her onto his lap and whispers into her ear that she doesn't need to do anything she isn't comfortable with, and the traffic light rule applies. So the red, yellow, and green safeguards. Okay. She starts to make out with him, and Sebastian asks Jack how she tastes. So he pushes her down, lifts her dress up to her hips, and pulls out a switchblade, cutting her panties off, and fully starts just chowing down.
Jack's like, "I'll tell you in a second. Hang on."
God. And is this their first, like, sexual?
Yeah.
Oh.
They only kissed in the cold room. That was it.
Yeah.
She starts to moan as he pulls her dress down to tweak her nipple.
"Your sounds are mine," Jack hisses, and before I realize what's happening, he's pushing my damp panties into my open mouth. I look down my body at the fierce command in Jack's eyes, whimpering at the erotic taste of my own arousal. He pushes the last of the fabric past my lips and holds my jaw shut with his thumb. "They are only mine. Now come on my fucking tongue and keep quiet." "Yes, daddy."
Okay.
Sure.
She comes as he eats her out and fingers her. He pulls the panties out of her mouth and kisses her, and then he begins to undo his belt buckle and tells her he's clean and has a vasectomy, but condoms are difficult for him. And at first I thought this was going to be a trauma thing, but then we find out why.
Ah! Oh!
She doesn't ask him to elaborate on the last statement and just says okay.
"Are you sure?" he asks. I nod until his eyebrows raise and I confirm it out loud. "This might feel different." I finally look down between us. Oh my God. Are we about to find out? I take in the sight of Jack's erection, the base gripped in his hand, my orgasm-addled brain taking a moment to process what I see. There are pairs of studs trailing the length of the underside of his cock with a Prince Albert piercing at the head, the titanium glinting in the dim light. Sebastian echoes my thoughts with sounds of surprise and words of approval. But it's like he doesn't exist to Jack. "Are you sure?" Heat floods my core, my pussy begging before I have a chance to. "Definitely. Very sure. Very, very sure." So it's pierced all the way up it?
Yeah.
I texted Charlotte when I was reading, and I was like, oh, what's up with, like, dark romances? Like, the dudes have their dick pierced. And then I was like, when I got to that part, I was like, it says how many piercings there are.
Oh, my God.
Is that called, like, a Jacob's ladder?
Yeah.
I've never heard that
before. I Googled it. Don't Google it.
Don't Google. Did you Google it?
Yeah.
No, Riley says, say less.
It's terrifying.
Ah! Is it scary?
Yeah. I told you.
I'm going to send it in the group chat.
Yeah.
That is...
That's exactly what he has, because it has the Prince Albert, too.
I hate that. Hate it.
I feel like that would get caught on so many things.
As he runs his dick over her clit, she moans, and he reminds her that he told her to stay quiet. Sebastian pipes up and says that he has a way to keep her quiet and starts to undo his pants. Jack moves in a flash, and all Kiri hears is a pained cry. She looks up and sees Jack slash Sebastian's throat with his knife, saying he'll never be able to touch her.
Jack tosses the switchblade into the shadows and turns, his pants barely clinging to his hips and his erection still hard beneath his briefs. He pulls his blood-soaked shirt off and stalks toward me, lethal, consuming, inescapable. When Jack reaches out a hand, it's like a magnet. And I take it, falling with sure steps as he leads me to the growing pool of blood and pulls me down with him to the floor. Jack holds a bloody hand around my throat as he lowers my back into the sticky warmth. He tugs his pants and briefs down and enters me with a single stroke to the sound of my shameless moan. What did I tell you at the club, Kiri? Jack says, his voice sweet and alluring, his eyes alight with silver sparks of fury. He slides out of my pussy, inch by inch, every round titanium ball causing a tingling swirl of growing desperation to ignite in my belly. What did I tell you? He repeats, squeezing a fraction tighter around my neck. Claim. Good girl. That's right. I said I'm not here to claim anyone but you. So that is exactly, a vicious thrust has me whimpering with pleasure, what I'm going to do. And any man who even imagines touching you will be sliced into ribbons of flesh. Another pounding thrust, the impending orgasm unstoppable in my core. And then I will fuck you in a pool of blood while their heart still drums its final beats.
Yeah, a man that knows what he wants. They fuck furiously in the pool of blood, and Kiri flips them so she's riding him while she tells him she'll kill any woman who touches him as well. She even sucks the blood off her finger, which drives him wild. You don't know what this man has.
He could have Hep C, Hep B, Hep A.
And
we don't know.
Their genitals all up in it. They're
it could be all up in
like...
her vagina.
Yeah, but, you know.
This is a biohazard mess.
And you guys are scientists. You know that.
Where's your PPE? When my channel tight... Oh, my God. Channel. When my channel tight... Come fuck this channel, boy.
Ew.
Like, who would ever say that?
You just did.
No one. Okay, but not seriously. When my channel tightens around his cock, Jack twists his hand in my hair, keeping me right where he wants me as he stares down into my face. So fucking beautiful, he whispers, and he watches every moment of the release that spins through my core. I come apart with my back lifting from the blood, chanting a hymn of Jack's name that sounds as much like ecstasy as it does a despairing cry. I swear, I can feel every caress of metal in my pussy, every drop of heat as Jack spills into me with a roar, every beat of his heart. Damn. Also, every little bead from his little penis beads.
Yeah. Sounds horrible, damn. But...
I'm just picturing them, like, tugging on her insides for some reason. I don't know why.
We go to Jack's POV, fast forward a little bit, and he is done disposing Sebastian's body. And he thinks it's a shame that he can't keep a bone from Sebastian to remember this night with Kiri and how amazing fucking her was.
Yeah.
It's starting to snow outside, and he can't help but think of his very first kill. He did it at 14 years old, and something finally clicked into place for him because he was born a killer and knew that he was never going to stop after that first one. So he said, like, growing up, his mom always knew he was different.
Does he say, like, what his first kill was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He knows he needs to have an alibi for Detective Hayes, so he goes to visit a loved one in the care home, and his loved one in the home is his mom.
Hmm.
Her name is Charlene. She's non-responsive as he tells her nurse and his mom how he will be in Canada for her birthday, so he figured he should come early to bring her flowers, because I guess he does this a couple times a year. He'll come bring her flowers.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
She's been in a vegetative slash minimally conscious state since he was 16, and this is because her ex-husband used to beat her and give her a traumatic brain injury for making a psychotic son, and then he killed his dad. So his dad beat the crap out of his mom until she almost died, and then that's his first kill, was his own father.
He had it coming.
Fuck. Honestly, though.
He tells his mom about his new boo thing he's seeing, and he tells her that he has to leave the area for a while, so he might not visit anytime soon. And then before he leaves, he kisses his mom's forehead and goes to get his trophy. At the office, Dr. Cannon, which is like their boss, visits and asks for a word with him. He tells Jack that there is talk about replacing Kiri, even though she's like one of the best wildlife biologists the school's ever seen. And Jack's like, why are we replacing her? I'm confused. Yeah. Cannon tells him that everything with the investigation and Brad, they are losing donors and everyone's getting pretty scared. So they need Jack to be like the face of the STEM initiative. And he's like, you always talk shit about her and say that she shouldn't work here. So I don't see why you care.
Yeah, Jack. Things are different now. He's like, well, I fucked her.
Jack asks when this needs to be done by, and Cannon says that it needs to be done within 3 months. And Jack's like, I really, truly fucked this up for her because I don't know if I can fix this. Mm. So he's like, can I break the news to her? And Cannon's like, yeah, go for it. You can do that. So he goes straight to her office to interrupt her video call. Her office is glass, but there's a switch to turn it opaque so no one can see inside.
Ooh, that's fancy.
That's a fancy office.
Yeah.
Then he takes his blazer off and rolls up his sleeves.
I can't help the devilish smile that curls my lips as I kneel in front of her desk and crawl beneath. Jack, she hisses, do your job, Kiri. I circle a hand around her ankle and deftly uncross her legs. That's kind of hot.
Well, she's like on a FaceTime.
He proceeds to lift her skirt up and lightly bites her inner thigh until he forces them apart. And she's like struggling to remain focused on her video chat.
I'm a man possessed as I bury my face between the apex of her inner thighs and pinch the fabric between my teeth, then lick the coarse seam, tracing the outline of her sweet clit. And her fucking sweet clit. I'm rewarded with the feel of her soaked panties, the warmth stirring insatiable desire as her thighs clamp against my temples, which has me ravenously lavishing her clit through those fucking wet panties like a starved beast.
Kiri moans his name, and the lady she's talking to mentions how she heard that he was among the STEM initiative for the university and how amazing it is. And Kiri's like, yeah, no, he's great. I really have to go. I'll call you later. When she hangs up with her, he tells her to get her sweet ass down there and ride his fucking face, and then he pulls her off her chair. She comes, and he helps her up and back into her heels, and when she asks for her panties back, he tells her,
I want you aware of your naked pussy all day, thinking about me tasting you, and how I'm gonna fuck you senseless later tonight. Wow. He's really wanting to, like, break this news to her? Easy.
Easy.
My brain is going, boss makes a dollar, I make a dime. That's why I fuck on company time.
Boom! Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. He stuffs her panties into his pocket, grabs his jacket, and tells her to be at his house at 5 o'clock. Then he flicks the lighter he stole back from her pocket. So remember, he gave her the lighter, mm-hmm. but he just stole it back. He tells her that she will participate in the STEM initiative, and she is his spotlight professor. He tells her to be prepared to hand over Thunderdome, and then he deletes the audio file of her talking about killing Mason, and he leaves. When he gets back to his desk, he fires his laptop up, and he has an email from a hired PI that he hired to look at Detective Hayes, because something about him seemed really off, and he has an email that confirms all his suspicions.
I was gonna say, from the very beginning, when Mr. Hayes came in the picture, he seemed
shady.
Yep, something seemed a little slimy, a little sleazeball-y. Look at me, I'm just fucking calling all of it tonight.
Look at you. You
got your bulletin board all pinned and ready.
Yeah, you guys don't see it, but it's here.
You are Charlie.
Yeah.
We go to Kiri's POV. She knows exactly where Jack lives without him telling her, because she's obviously stalked him for 3 years in this town alone. And she's like, I never actually thought I would go into his house as a guest.
That's fair.
When she gets there, he pulls her inside, and she mentions that she doesn't think Hayes followed her.
If he does, I'll fucking flay the skin from his face and feed it to him, Jack says. And they claim romance is dead. Jack glances at me with a smirk as he turns a second lock. Don't even pretend it wouldn't make your panties soaking wet, little Meyer. I would need panties for that, but a certain professor with a thing for cold rooms and eating pussy in the office stole mine.
She comments that three locks on the door is a bit excessive, and then he takes her coat to see she is in his borrowed shirt with the top buttons undone to reveal a lacy black bra and simple leggings. He walks her away and tells her that they have important stuff to talk about, so he can't touch her yet or they'll never stop. He leaves her out of the entryway to get a glass of wine, and they sit on the couch. He has a whole ass charcuterie board laid out on the coffee table and waits for her to make a plate and eat some food before he starts talking. He gives her all the info he has on Hayes and explains that something did not sit right, and he points to something specific.
Tell me the tea.
Hayes was let go from the FBI 5 years ago due to his neglect on the Silent Slayer case. He only resurfaced 4 years ago when he got his PI license, and now he's focused on Kiri trying to solve the case that got him fired. So like when he was going to the university, he's like, I'm with the FBI, I have questions.
Liar.
That's impersonating a federal agent, sir.
Prison.
That's a crime. Straight to jail.
Jack tells her that he doesn't want her anywhere near Hayes since he seems a bit unhinged over the case, and he wants her to move in with him.
Well.
Moving fast.
What are we?
Yeah, what are you guys? Come on.
She realizes that Jack set up this whole night for her and looked into Hayes for her, and she doesn't know what to say other than, I have a dog. And he's like, okay.
Bring
She's
your dog.
Like, no, like, my dog sheds. Like, I have a dog. Like,
my dog is gonna come here.
I forgot what type of dog she has, but his name's Cornetto, and she calls him Corn Dog, and I thought that was really cute.
That is so
Corn
cute. Dog.
His phone starts to ring, so he excuses himself, and she gets up to get actual liquor instead of wine, and she starts snooping for shot glasses to go with the tequila she got. She finds a letter from the Canadian government about how Jack needs his passport updated to come over there, and it's dated 7 days ago. So she stops reading, and she's like, I'm about to have another flashback.
Oh.
She grabs the tequila and goes to the conservatory for fresh air, and the room is filled with all blue flowers.
Cute.
And they're all different types of flowers too. So he like perfected getting all of these the exact same shade of her eyes.
That is so cool.
Because of that video that he had.
The 8mm of her eyes dying.
Oh my God. What a poet.
As she's stunned staring at all the flowers, she sees a man outside in a white coat that is loading stuff into a van. And the side of the van reads, Morningstar Carpet Company. And Jack walks in just as the guy's leaving. She asks Jack if he changed his carpet today from a cream color. And he just like smiles and then walks away. So he changed his literal carpet for her.
If he wanted to, he would. You hear that, ladies?
She feels like she's gonna pass out, but she follows and asks him why all the flowers are blue, and he's like, you already know the answer for that. And then he starts to apologize for making her feel unwanted and alone the last 3 years. He tells her she is wanted and not alone, and then he kisses her and pulls her into an embrace, which is like not his style.
Intimate.
He doesn't just like hug people.
Yeah.
She thinks that this has to be love, even though psychopaths can't feel love, but it's like his version of it, and she feels it towards him too, which again, pump the brakes.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, she's also a psychopath, so...
A match made in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
She's been stalking him for like years and years. So
he's like into it though.
They pull away and he asks her to stay again, even with the dog. And he doesn't care if it starts rumors at work. He just wants her safe and away from Hayes. She tells him that she'll stay if he shows her the whole house, and she doesn't need to voice that she wants to see his kill room.
She's like, I want to play.
Show me what you got. Let's compare.
Yeah.
He takes her on a grand tour. They stop in his room, which is now their room. And she's like, I still need to see the rest of the house. So he takes her to his office and hesitates before he opens up a hidden bookshelf. And he has like a whole way to get in. Like it's like the most top security. Like it takes like a handprint, a key, like biometrics, like everything.
Damn.
His trophy room and kill room is the total opposite of his house. It has like colors, but the rest of the house is like all black and white. She is getting hella soaked over the details of the room and what she plans to do with him there. She kisses him and palms his erection through his pants, and she reminds him of a scenario he spoke about in the campus cold room and wants to do just that. So she knocks back the rest of his scotch, takes an ice cube between her teeth before lowering herself to the ground and undoing his pants.
I run the shard of ice across one of the studs closest to the base of his cock before skating the Prince Albert piercing across the length of my tongue, relishing the bead of salty pre-cum gathered at the head.
All of these women love their pre-cum.
They do. They just gobble it up. I don't think I've ever noticed it in my life.
I have, but I'm not like, Yum.
A delicacy.
I'm just like, okay.
Let me lick that. I caressed the crown of his cock with gentle teasing licks, tracing his piercing before taking it between my teeth with a gentle tug that has Jack hissing with desire. Every time it says hissing, I'm always like, like a cat. Yeah. Yeah.
She gets more ice from the glass and takes her time slowly going over his piercings until he's cursing in Danish, and then she finally starts to suck his dick. He tells her to keep her eyes on him, and then he says,
I'm going to choke that pretty throat with my cock, and you're going to watch me do it. You're going to take everything I give you. You're going to swallow every rung of this fucking ladder and every drop of cum. And you will not take those beautiful blue eyes off me. Understand? Yes, Daddy, I do. You're gonna swallow this fucking ladder. Every wrong.
She nods and he calls her a good girl, and then he proceeds to fuck her throat as she gags and tears stream down her face, but she never breaks eye contact. She feels that he's close, so she bobs her head against his thrusts and moans until he comes. She notices the medication vials of sedatives and asks if that's what he really wants to do to her, and she preps a vial and turns towards him, telling him this is his chance to take her while she's quiet. He can have the somnophilia kink if he wants. He doesn't say anything, so she steps forward with the syringe and she says,
don't you want me silent and compliant for once? You can do anything you want to me. Taste me, fuck me, manipulate me, dominate me, spray your cum all over me while my eyes are closed and my limbs are limp. God damn.
Don't you want that?
Don't you want to fuck a dead body?
I mean, maybe he does.
I was gonna say, what, Charlotte? Maybe I'll wake to your cock already thrusting balls deep into my swollen pussy and I'll beg you to keep me going. Anything you want. I'm giving you permission to take it. Don't you want that, Jack? Don't you want me? Don't you?
Gaslighting.
I know. She's like, don't you? He said, you do. You do.
You don't think I'm pretty?
That's what you're saying. She tells him that she wants it and she trusts him. And as she gets onto the gurney in the room with the restraints, she's like, I'll just make the choice for you. And like goes to like stab herself in the neck. He steps up and takes the syringe and then puts the plunger into her neck and she drops to a dreamless sleep.
Okay. She doesn't just, you know, a nice graceful fall. She's like, boom.
Good night.
And he's like, ah, that's so hot.
We go to Jack's POV. He fixes her body on the gurney to a new position and moves her hair from her face. He lowers his slacks again and can't help but think of all the other times he pictured her like this. He grabs a scalpel and shreds his shirt off her body as well as her bra, and then he takes time looking at her naked body. He starts to touch himself and he parts her legs, opening them wider.
After I discard my slacks, I drop down over her slumbering body and breathe in her scent just to stir the hunger before I bite into her fleshy swell of the bottom of her breast. Ew. My fingers seek the warm slit of her pussy as I coax her taut nipple to pebble harder with my tongue. Sinking two fingers inside, I groan at the soft give of her flesh. No resistance. Her slick arousal coats my finger as I plunder deeper, so inviting.
A plunderer?
Oh.
Also, her underboob? You're gonna just bite her underboob?
I don't. The fleshy swell? No. No, thank you.
He feels a very strong urge to grab the scalpel and hurt her to see her bone inside, but he grabs his charcoal pencil instead and starts tracing her bones, which I was like, excuse me,
sir.
So he's just sitting there like meticulously like tracing out all of her like rib cages, like her sternum, like all of her bones.
Literally insane.
Once he's finished, he sits up and sees the silhouette of the skeleton, and it's enough to tame a murderous beast inside him. He finally thrusts inside her and watches as each piercing disappears, and then he fucks her roughly while looking at her skeleton silhouette, and it's starting to smudge.
A growl works free from the base of my throat. So goddamn perfect, little Meyer. I want to fuck you so brutally, I turn you inside out. I'm not the one in control here. She owns me. Every fiber of my being, every cell coursing through my marrow, she is the one dominating me, and I'm simply the depraved monster subservient to her commands. I want to turn you inside out.
Yes. Once he's done, he thrusts into her ass all the way to the base.
I know.
He fucks her harder and harder until he notices her eyelids are starting to twitch and her breathing is getting faster. He tells her to open her eyes and she gasps as she wakes up. She moans loudly and her ass squeezes around his dick. They come at the same time and she looks down at her body covered in charcoal and she's like, I'm not even a little bit surprised.
Imagine waking up to doing anal. Like your mid-anal act.
And it's like rough anal.
Where's the preparation? Like, how do you know she didn't have like a big meal? Maybe she ate a burrito earlier.
Yeah, she could have shat all over you, sir. The unknown.
No one in these books is ever getting shitted on.
No.
Unrealistic.
I want to see a book where someone gets shit on their dick, okay? For once.
Anyone got any wrecks?
I'm scared of those.
Let's know. I don't know. Please don't.
The next Riley reads.
So relatable, guys.
Oh my god. Can you imagine if you got like a book less than 100 pages and it's just like
poo dick?
Oh, it exists. 100%. It exists.
It has to exist. I bet it's a kink for someone out there.
Scat.
Oh, yeah.
Scat.
What? It's a thing? It really is a thing?
Scat? Yeah, yeah. People like duty.
Yeah, people like duty. I didn't know that.
I'm sure at least one person listening to this is like, me. And to you I say, hey,
I hope you feel heard this episode.
I feel like I'm giving the impression that I'm into it. Yeah, I'm not. But I'm just saying, hey, no. I'm acknowledging that it's a thing.
We're respectful. I swear, every time we record, I learn something new.
You really didn't know that was a thing?
No. I didn't know people enjoyed poo.
Yeah, two girls, one cup.
Okay,
Brazilian fart porn, cake farts.
What are...
I think that's it.
You've seen some
German
shit.
Scheisse porn.
Jesus Christ. And then there's...
Hello?
Shelby and I here, and we're like, hmm?
So the person into poo.
I don't like poo.
We are going to state it here for the people. Charlotte does not like poo.
No.
Wow, what a tangent.
He picks her up and locks everything back up for this trophy room. He takes her to their bathroom and starts the soaker tub so he can clean her. They're silent and she asks what he's thinking and he tells her that he's thinking of Hayes and how complicated everything is getting around them and how he isn't sure how much longer he can stay. And all she says is that she trusts him and then he finishes cleaning her and then washes off and they go to bed. We switch to Kiri's POV. It's been 1 week and so that song here. Been 1 week.
She's a little bit. Oh. She's not angry. Yeah. I'm a hurt. It's not a banana. But it's a banana. But it's a banana. Yeah. I'm a banana. Honestly, bare naked ladies slap.
It's a banger for sure.
She's lived with Jack one whole week and she thinks it will never be enough time with him. She knows at some point it has to end though and it's going to crush her. So to not get too attached to him, she switches up her schedule every day. And she also doesn't forget to check on Colby. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about him.
Yeah, he's still just there chilling.
Shit. Yeah, I completely forgot about him.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces. I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know, I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hayes has also left her alone for the most part, but she can tell that he is getting restless. He's currently standing at the back of lecture hall while she teaches, and when class is dismissed, they're alone. She asks what she can do for him, and he tells her that he's there to check in on her. He asks her how her hand is doing, and she shows him that the stitches are now out. He tells her that he followed up on Jack replacing her award and was surprised it checked out since there was animosity between the two.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. He asks if it's true that she's staying with him, and she says that she is, and he's like, perfect, then where was he the weekend before last? And the weekend before last was Brad's house being burnt.
Yeah, but I thought they both had an alibi for that.
Hayes isn't buying it.
Hayes is looking into it.
You bitch, Hayes.
Oh, no, I'm wrong. It was Sebastian. That's Sebastian's body he's talking about. Because she says, like, why are you asking? And he says, we found a body not far from the state lines, and it has a link to the Silent Slayer. And remember, Sebastian was the brother of one of the Slayer's victims.
So now he's caught in the web.
Oh, shit.
So I apologize. Not Brad's house, Sebastian.
You should be sorry. How dare you?
God.
He asks her again where Jack was, and she struggles for a minute to give him an alibi because she didn't think that she would have to come up with something so fast. She tries to steer him away, but it's not working. He's like, can't be coincidence that Jack has lived in Ashgrove when she did, and now he's going to leave the university until she came along, and now he's staying. And how she suffered such a traumatic event, she can't be sure it was Jack since the Silent Slayer wore a mask. So he's like, how do you know it's not Jack?
I mean,
he steps closer to her as she steps back, and he tells her that she must be alone and confused and he can help her. And then Jack walks in. Jack tells Hayes that he hopes he isn't cornering his girlfriend alone in her lecture hall, and she knows if she says something to Jack right this instant about Hayes like creeping her out, Jack would just murder him in her classroom.
Yeah.
Hayes starts to question Jack about the weekend before last, and he's giving all the same answers as Kiri. They excuse themselves from Hayes, and once they're alone, she asks if she's his girlfriend.
Oh.
She's like, I'm your girlfriend?
We have boyfriend and girlfriend?
And he's like, yeah, of course. That would be the only thing that you take away from the whole fucking conversation.
That's all out here.
Jack tells her that Hayes needs to go soon, and she has a plan for that, and she will share when she's ready. At the end of the day, they get back to Jack's house. She is staring at herself in the bathroom mirror when Jack appears and asks what she's thinking about, and she's just like, I'm just really stressed over Hayes. I want to take care of it, like, get it done. And he says, when will you share your plan with me? And she says, give her a couple days. She turns around and hugs him, and then she takes him to the shower. She undresses and gets in and waits for him to join, and he slowly looks down at her naked body, and when he finally meets her eyes, she feels precious and worshipped. He undresses and gets in the shower and kisses her. She grabs his dick and goes up every barbell till she gets to the tip. And she asks if he's going to be sweet with her, and he says something in Danish and then picks her up and pushes her against the wall and thrusts into her. Every time they mention that he's Danish, have either of you watched the TV show Hannibal? It's like the spinoff.
Mm-mm.
Damn. That's who I like picture.
I picture a Danish.
As Jack.
Ooh, I love a good Danish.
Cheese or like fruit?
Ooh, a cheese Danish? Fuck me up.
Just a big cheese Danish.
Just going around stabbing people.
It's like, look at my pierced dick. My Danish dick. Made out of bread.
Mmm. Delicious.
Cheesy.
I feel like I always, like, when I'm writing my notes, I'm like, I wonder what tangents I'll go off on, but it was never this one.
So many good ones.
He continues to say stuff in Danish, and she begs him to say something she understands, and he says, you're mine. They continue to fuck each other passionately until she is whispering for him to come with her, and they finish, and she knows that she needs to continue with her plan. Once he is deep asleep, she gets up and grabs Cornetto, and she goes to his office to grab a hidden bag she stashed there. She changes into hunting gear and then sits down to write Jack a note. She writes her letter, and then on a second piece of paper, she writes three words, frozen, soldier, distraction.
The code. Like
the coordinates.
The codes. Yeah.
Yeah.
She tells Cornetto that he can't go with her this time, and then she leaves.
Sorry, corndog.
Little cutie. Jack catches up to her at the cabin, and she's surprised that he figured it out so fast, and he said that he almost missed her note. She tells him that the cabin belonged to her grandfather, but she made a bunch of changes to it, and he tenses, and she knows he's wondering what's going on. She steps up to him and kisses him, and when she breaks the kiss, she tells him that she has a present for him. She pulls out a tablet and clicks something that shows him the screen of Colby Jackson. She tells him he's in the basement, but she can't go in because it's going to ruin all the fun. She lays a bear trap and sets it up knowing Colby won't see it. She tells Jack not to wander the property because there's like multiple bear traps laid up everywhere.
Damn.
She tosses the backpack to him and lets him know that there are knives, a garrote, whatever he wants to use, and that she's only there as a contingency plan, and then she pulls out a crossbow and some arrows. He tells her that she can go ahead and take this one since he took one of hers, and then he tells her that he only took one of hers because he couldn't have what he truly wanted, which was her. I was like, oh, you guys are disgusting.
Cute.
They kiss, and when it breaks, he tells her that he definitely wants to watch her, though. They get into position, she grabs the tablet, and she navigates how to unlock the cage from the tablet alone, and then they watch as Colby takes his chance for escape. He tries to run full sprint out in the woods when his foot hits the bear trap, and it snaps against his bones, and he screams in pain, and I'm like, that is absolutely terrifying.
That is. Being caught in a bear trap?
Oh my god.
Did you think about bear traps a lot as a kid?
Yes, actually. Yes.
That's because Fox and the Hound.
Oh, that's probably
Fuck
why,
that
yeah.
movie. Fuck
yeah.
that movie.
I just feel like I had like an irrational fear of bear traps, though.
Yes. That's fair fear because it's terrifying.
Yes.
When he tries to stand and limp away with the trap still attached to him, she lets the first arrow go. Jack is impressed by her shot and she decides to go put him out of his misery.
Didn't she like shoot him in the butthole?
Yeah, she like shot him almost in the asshole. Colby doesn't hear her approach and she steps on the chain, causing it to jerk against his leg, and I was like,
no,
gross,
no thank you.
He tries to kick at her and then Jack approaches and is pissed that Colby would even try to harm her.
He's trying to survive.
You try to kick my girlfriend? I don't think so.
I'll fucking kill you.
Reasonable.
She grabs the knife off her belt and tells him that he should know better. There's no escaping. And then she lunges and stabs a blade into his thigh, severing his femoral artery. And then she drops to her knees and pushes another blade into his larynx and just watches him die. And I was like, you didn't need to do the larynx. The femoral artery was...
He was already going to go. Yep. God damn.
Jack kneels behind her and holds her close and runs his hands down her body.
Jack's hand keeps traveling down until it cups my pussy. I lean against his touch, desperate for friction. For more, I wonder, if I slide my fingers into your panties, would I find your cunt wet and desperate to be filled? I'm sure you will.
Only one way to find out.
Stick them down there, partner.
He unbuttons his pants and then pulls hers down and enters her in one thrust.
My fingers dig into the damp earth and Jack grips the flesh of my hips and thrusts, one pounding hit after the next. Every stroke a long glide of his cock that I feel each rung of the ladder of studs trailing the underside of his erection. The curved bar at the head of his cock ignites every nerve in deep need and dark fantasy.
Yikes.
As he fucks her, he tells her that he's never seen anything as beautiful as watching her kill Colby. And then he tells her,
and it's my touch that makes you tremble, my mouth on your pussy that makes you beg, my cock buried in your cunt that makes you moan, my cum that will be dripping down your legs. Tell me I'm the only one you want, the only one who can stand in your flame as you burn down the world.
Okay.
Aww.
A poet.
Yeah.
She tells him no matter where he goes or what he does, he will be the only one that she wants. And then Jack tells her he wants to fuck her until she's begging him to stop making her come. She comes but doesn't say anything, and he takes that as a challenge, and he starts spanking her and teasing her as he fucks her some more. She begs him to please let her come again, and he finally relents until they both finish. So now they're both covered in mud and dirt, and she's covered in both of their cum. He can see something's bugging her, so he asks what's wrong. She lets him know Dr. Cannon wants to talk to her this morning, and she now has to go looking like this. Jack tells her to text him, and he'll take care of the cleanup here. She thanks him and says to put the tools in the basement, and she'll set off any traps for him, and then she quickly turns around so he can't see the look on her face. She also lets him know there's other things in there for him too, and it's not a trap. He has the tablet, and you can't be locked inside from the tablet. She quickly kisses him and then leaves. She gets to Jack's house, goes to the guest bedroom, opening up her laptop and going onto the university VPN. She then hacks into Jack's security system and puts the video of her in the office on a loop. She pets Cornetto and leaves to go to her house. She thinks that if she's successful in her plan, Jack will be able to go anywhere he wants without the threat of Hayes and the mountain of evidence that she had against him. Just as she turns to get the pistol from the gun safe, something hits her in the back and she drops to the floor stunned. Then a wet rag covers her nose and mouth, the man's voice telling her, "It will be okay, Isabel, just go to sleep." And she does. So she's back at her house grabbing a couple more things and she gets tased and then chloroformed.
Who is it? Who do you think it is?
Jack?
He's like, we're gonna fuck again.
Surprise!
Thought you could get away from me? Gotcha, babe.
We switch to Jack's POV. He watches her leave and has a really awful feeling in his stomach, so he sets her tablet down and puts a timer on his phone for 20 minutes. So he's like, after 20 minutes, I'm going to text her and see if she got to the university okay. When he gets the body to the basement, he sees that it's actually Kiri's kill room. The freezer's calling his attention, so he goes there first and sees a note in her handwriting addressed to him. And I'm going to read it because it is important.
Read it. Yeah.
Dear Jack, here's all I have of you. I thought it would hurt to give these things away. From the moment we first met in my home, I've clung to every piece of you I could find. I know you don't think you saved me that day. Maybe you're right, but not in the way that you think. You gave me the chance to save myself. Whether you knew it or not, Jack, you became the scaffolding I rebuilt my life on. Maybe that's why it doesn't hurt to give these pieces of you back, because I can stand on my own now. When I take the scaffolding down, I like the life I've built. It might not be everyone's life, but it's mine, and I am the way I want to be. And I want to share my life with you, the real you, not the man I thought I knew from these pieces you left behind and the moments I stole. So I give you these things with a lighter heart. I'm not so naive to think you won't just take them and disappear. I know you intend to leave West Payne, Jack. I promise that I won't follow this time. I can only hope that what we've shared felt as real for you as it feels for me. I built up an image of an angel of vengeance who swept into my life on a cold wind in my darkest hour. I wanted to destroy the man I met after years of watching from the shadows, and I love the man I've come to know in the process of trying to burn you down. I love you, Jack Sorensen. You're the only man I've ever loved, the only man I ever will. Oh. She says goodbye.
No.
He finally notices all the items next to the freezer and his stomach churns before he notices one particular scrap of paper. It was his receipt to the restaurant he was waiting for the Silent Slayer the night he attacked Kiri. He finally realizes how long she's actually been stalking him, and she's now sacrificing all of her leverage. He knows something is wrong, but he does what she asked and thinks about their future while he like deflushes Colby's body. And I'm like, that does not take 20 minutes, right?
What does he do to his body?
Defleshing it?
Yeah, I would feel like that would take a long time. But I mean, if he's a doctor and he specializes in decomposition, maybe he just does a little tink tink.
True.
When his 20-minute alarm goes off, he texts her to call him, but she doesn't respond. So he's like, I'm going to go find her. I'll deal with this later. He gets to the university and her office is empty. So he finds Dr. Cannon, but Dr. Cannon hasn't seen her. He received an email from her a few minutes ago rescheduling their meeting.
Where are you, Kiri?
He pulls up his home security feed and sees her working at the guest room desk, but something seems off. When she doesn't really move, he catches the loop in the feed and throws his phone across the room, shattering it. And everybody in the office is watching this happen. So he asks to borrow Joy's phone, their coworker and Kiri's friend, and the call goes straight to voicemail. So he leaves to go find her. He refuses to let her run away from him, and then it clicks. She's going after Hayes by herself.
Kiri, no!
Kiri, yes.
He goes straight to Hayes' cheap motel room because he knows where he's staying because of the PI. Mm-hmm. He doesn't see Hayes' car, but he still breaks into the room and doesn't find anything other than a laptop. And when he opens the laptop, it takes like obsession to a whole new degree. There's like years and years of pictures of Kiri, and then there's like a fixation file of him trying to connect Jack to the Silent Slayer.
Oh, shit.
He continues sleuthing until he sees something that the PI failed to mention to Jack. And that piece of information is that Hayes bought Kiri's childhood home.
Yeah.
So now he's going to go to the childhood home, but not before he reports her missing. We switch to Kiri's POV. She wakes up sore and sick to her stomach. And when she looks at her surroundings, she almost throws up. But she's like, I must be having a flashback. I need to take deep breaths. And when she's done with that, she's like, oh, nope, I'm in my childhood home. And she is bound to a wooden chair by her wrists and her ankles.
Nightmare.
And she said that everything is like pretty much the same exact way as, yeah.
Don't like that.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Hayes enters from the kitchen and apologizes to her, saying that this is excessive, but it's for her own safety as well as the safety of others. She says that she does not feel very safe and he should let her go, but he's like, I can't do that. It's the only way to flush him out. And she's like, flush who out? And he's like, Jack. And she's like, Jack is not the Silent Slayer. And he's like, no, I know that. He's the Tri-City Phantom.
What?
And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, what?
He tells her that what happened the night with the murder of her parents with the Silent Slayer was on the FBI. There's a mixed communication and they didn't catch him at the bar that night like they were supposed to. And the FBI raided his hotel room instead. of going to the bar that he was supposed to be at.
Oh, shit.
So the bar that he picked her up at is where the FBI was supposed to be waiting for him, and that didn't happen. He then shows her grainy images of Jack at the bar the same year that she was attacked. She tells him to get to the point already, and he confesses that he's been watching her since foster care and noticed that every town she went to, bodies of men within a certain radius around her went missing. So then he went through all the old evidence once she was at the university, and it kept happening, and he was surprised to see Jack Sorensen in the bar photos from that night. So you could see Jack in the photos trying to stalk the Silent Slayer at the same bar.
Okay.
She says that she already knew that Jack lived in the same city as her previously, and it literally doesn't prove anything. He then gets to a part where he does solve everything, but she pretends that he's like delusional. Jack killed Winters, the Silent Slayer. Once the threat to his territory was taken care of, he moved on. Perhaps he didn't even realize you'd survived at first, but then you showed up at West Payne all those years later, and it was an opportunity he couldn't walk away from. And all the while, he's been killing in the Tri-City area, keeping himself entertained until he gets whatever he wants from you. And she's like, you're crazy.
I mean, yeah, but also, he's right.
Mm-hmm.
He tells her his plan won't fail this time. Jack will come to finish her off here in her childhood home as a full circle moment, since he is a psychopath. But she knows in her heart that's not true. Like, he was probably packing up. Like, she gave him the opportunity to leave. Hayes tells her all the things Jack hasn't said to her. Like, he's like, has he told you he loves you? Has he told you that he wants to be with you for it? Like, all this stuff. And she's like crying because she knows that he hasn't said that stuff, but she also knows that he doesn't need to say it to mean it.
Right.
And as she starts thrashing and screaming, there's three beeps on the monitors. So I forgot to mention, Hayes also has like 8 different TV monitors set up in the corner of the room with security fees to see who's like coming to the house.
That bitch.
And since there's 3 beeps on all the monitors, he knows that like Jack tripped the security system and he can see him arriving. Jack tells Hayes to let Kiri go and that she hasn't done anything, and he'll give Hayes whatever he wants to make it happen. Hayes demands a confession, and Jack says, okay, but you have to let her go first. And he's like, I'll show you proof, but only on that condition. Hayes laughs and tases Jack, saying he knows he would never trust him. And then Kiri's like really smart, and she's like, I'm gonna play the victim. I know Hayes won't resist. So she starts playing the victim and was like, I can't believe you were right this whole time. I'm so scared. And Hayes is like, it's okay. Like, I'm gonna protect you. She makes herself small and meek and then calls his name. When Hayes gets closer to her, she headbutts him as hard as she can, breaking his nose and grabbing his gun.
Yeah.
Get him.
Hayes manages to get the gun from her hand, and then she hits him with the chair to hurry and grab it when he tases her again. She hears a tussle and Jack telling her to run. And when she looks over, Hayes is winning the fight with Jack, since Jack is bound because he put like handcuffs on him and stuff after he tased him.
Mm-hmm.
And she has like a whole new rage in her chest over this, because Jack's being hurt and she loves Jack.
That's her boo.
She tackles Hayes as the gun goes off, and then she stabs him in the neck with a piece of a broken chair. As he lays there dying, she tells him that he let Trevor take her family and she will not let him take her angel. And as soon as he takes his last breath, she turns to Jack. He's alive and smiling at her, and she helps him undo the bound wrists. She looks at her childhood home as her vision starts to blur, and she knows that she cannot hide the gunshot wound from Jack anymore. And she tells him thank you for everything, and she loves him, and then she falls to the ground. Everything goes black. So when the gun went off, it shot her, not Jack.
Kiri.
Yeah, a lot of shit's happening.
Yeah. So much.
We switch to Jack's POV. As he clutches her body to stop her bleeding, he begs her to stay with him, and he dials 911, telling them to hurry the fuck up, and then hangs up the phone. He continues to beg her to stay and open her eyes and apologizes for not protecting her better. He sets her down and deposits the items from his trunk near Hayes' body. He does a quick sweep of the kitchen and sees that it has enough supplies to burn the house down. So he takes a towel and makes it look like Hayes killed himself. Then he removes the shard of wood from his neck. He douses the body with cooking oil and takes a Zippo out and lights the body on fire. He scoops Kiri and walks out of the house as an ambulance pulls up. He helps the paramedics get her inside and tells them that no one else is in the house and that they need to head to the hospital now. They work to stabilize her when she crashes and they have to administer emergency CPR. She stops breathing until a slow but steady beep comes from the machine and she flatlines.
This part made me so annoyed because he was like in the ambulance and the paramedics are doing everything they can. And then he's like, get out of my way. I know what's best.
And then he goes up to her and starts doing his own chest compressions on her as he's literally breaking her ribs and sternum. And he's like, I will shatter every bone in your body to bring you back. And he just keeps fucking going.
They do say if you're not breaking ribs, you're not doing it right. That is the thing.
True.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But damn.
Yeah. He continues until the alarm on the machine starts back up and the paramedics can administer the AED. Her heartbeat comes back on the screen and they arrive at the hospital. It's been a week. He's back at the police department and Officer Chandler tells him the remains of Agent Hayes were recovered at the house and he apologizes for how uncomfortable that must be for Jack given his relationship with Kiri. He gave the police Hayes' computer that he found with everything on it and of course he uploaded more items to frame Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
He framed him for the murders of Sebastian and Ryan and like a whole plan to pin it on Brad and possibly more evidence in relation to Mason and Colby. So Brad is a free man now because he's like, I'll just put it on this guy.
There you go.
He knows when he can finally get back to Kiri's cabin, he'll dispose of Colby and Mason properly since no evidence is collected on them yet. All the other evidence he planted shows that Hayes had an unhealthy obsession and was unhinged and Kiri and himself should be safe now. The officer asks how she is and he says that she's making a comeback health-wise but psychologically it's going to take a long time. Jack tells them to let him know if they need anything else and then he leaves the police department to go to the hospital. He sits next to her and she's awake asking what he brought her. And he says that he brought her a reply to the letter that she left him at the cabin. He goes to read it to her and tells her it's them together forever, a real partnership, no going back. He tells her that he was planning to leave, but not before he worked out a position at the same university in Canada for her too. He wants her to follow him forever to new places, but only if she wants to, since so many of her choices in life have been taken away. And he also tells her, if you want to stay here in West Payne, like, I'll stay with you. She tells him that she does want to go to Canada with him, and Alberta has no idea what's coming for him.
Yeah.
Oh, murder.
And we go to the epilogue. It is 3 years later. They're at a bar for an event with a coworker named Sydney. Jack goes to get them all champagne and Sydney complains how gross in love they are and how she is sadly single. Kiri starts pointing to men at the bar asking about one in particular and he catches Sydney's eye. Kiri notices Jack's not at the bar getting them champagne like he told them he was going to do and demands to know where the fuck her husband disappeared to. They're married.
Her husband.
She goes to find him when the auctioneer on stage starts speaking and she texts Jack to get his ass back here now or she's gonna flay his skin off his body.
Oh, guys.
Happy wife, happy life.
The person on stage starts talking about the Educator of the Year award and how the winner is Dr. Kiri Roth and her husband Jack Sorensen is gonna present her with it. So he's finally presenting her with an award she deserves.
Oh.
Jack keeps eye contact with her as he delivers a beautiful speech about all her achievements and hard work, not only at this current university, but the last 6 years that he's known her. He tells her she's as integral to him as the lattice of marrow within his bones and he loves her. She makes her way to the stage and accepts the award and thanks him for everything that he's done for her. They stay long enough to charm some donors and then they go home. She wakes up to Jack missing from bed and a present for her downstairs. Inside is a worn Zippo lighter, but not the same one he used to burn her childhood house down with. The initials on this one read SB. She gets dressed and goes out with Cornetto to find Jack. She kisses him and asks what he's up to since he didn't make it very hard to find him this time. They continue the hike until he stops at yet another present on a waterproof blanket. It's a new compound bow and arrows to match. He tells her to get it all set up and test it to see if it's a good fit. And when she looks through the scope, she sees a middle-aged, powerfully built man stumble from the bushes. It's Sean Bailey, former owner of her new lighter, and he meets all the criteria. Jack asks if her panties are soaking wet yet, and she says there's only one way to find out, and then she lets loose an arrow.
Psychos. Psychos. So, Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I agree. Like four and a half. 4.75.
Ooh.
Yeah, I really liked it. That was a good one.
Do you think Jack is sexy?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he is. Would you trade places with Kiri?
No.
Me either.
No. Sounds scary.
No.
It's a no from me, dog.
So next week, we're telling Riley all about Butcher and Blackbird by Bryn Weaver, who is also one of the authors of today's book. So we're going to have Riley look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
I've seen this book around a lot on the internet.
Yeah, it's very popular.
It is popping right now. Seen a lot of ads for it. It's like, I really like the pink and black. Very cute, very cute. It's got a man and a woman on the front, and they're kissing, and there's weapons and bones and skulls. I feel like it's possibly going to be another, like, two killers type of thing.
Okay.
That's the vibe I'm getting.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Smut Up and Listen Podcast, and on TikTok at Smut Up and Listen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at Smut Up and Listen Podcast and on TikTok at Smut Up and Listen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.